you know, the Elcor in the room are the facial animation issues.
Nice. Nicely done. Yeah.
Thanks. Yeah. I was thinking, what is a Mass Effect elephant?
Yeah, there
it's
you
definitely
go.
An Elcor. Mm-hmm. Hey everybody, this is episode 267 of the Rated NA podcast for nerdappropriate.com, and I am your host Ash.
And I'm Scott.
And Matt is not here today. He actually fell down the stairs.
Oh really?
And yeah, he fell down the stairs and he broke his pinky finger, so he is unable to attend. He's getting a replacement pinky finger now, and we wish him a speedy recovery.
That's much better than what I heard.
Oh yeah?
Yeah.
What did you hear?
I heard he had the shivers.
And the shivers. The shivers. What is that from? I totally forgot.
I have no idea. Although there was a classic Sierra point and click adventure game called Shivers.
Oh man.
Do you remember that one?
So very much. I guess Telltale's sort of taking over for the old Sierras.
Yeah, but these were the ones where it was like the pre-rendered environments. You'd kind of click through them to solve the puzzles, and
right.
Shivers was like just spooky enough, but not too spooky, you know.
Yeah. Well, this episode is actually brought to you by Audible. And if you go to audibletrial.com/ratedNA, you can pick up a free audio book and you'll help out the show in the process. And I think, Scott, are you listening to something Mass Effect related?
Yeah, this is going to be sort of a Mass Effect podcast. So my Audible pick this week is Mass Effect Nexus Uprising. Are you familiar with the title?
I'm familiar with the event. It actually factors in very heavily into the narrative, which is pretty cool. And the only thing I'm kind of at qualms about is I wish I could have experienced it in the game.
Yeah.
I would have loved to have seen it, but I guess that's what the novel's for. So that's pretty damn cool.
Yeah. To be completely honest with you, and I mean, I'll try not to talk about spoilers too much, but, you know, obviously I would assume that if you're listening to this podcast, you're playing the game. And so, you know, that when you arrive at the Nexus, it kind of just looks like they're just kind of getting everything unpacked or not, for lack of a better description. And the story of Nexus Uprising tells you what happens when the Nexus first arrived in the Andromeda system. And, you know, when your rider first arrives to the Nexus, it just kind of looks like it is being disused, if you will.
Yeah.
But, you know, just like the Hyperion, the Nexus also encountered the Scourge upon arrival. And so like this kind of tells the story of the total shit show that they walked into or woke up to, I guess. Which is something you learn about right at the outset of the game when you first go to the Nexus. You start to talk to people and they kind of allude to some things that happened in the past. And this book sort of tells the events of what happened before you arrived at the station, which is really interesting. It actually gives me a more of an appreciation for going to the Nexus and talking to the characters on the Nexus, because many of those characters, including like the people that are sort of in charge by default, are factor heavily into the story as well. So,
oh, good, good. I do feel like a lot of those characters that you encounter on the Nexus, the NPCs that you know, you don't have them with you on your ship.
Yes.
But they're, you know, they're kind of back at home at base. I do feel like they have these like rich backstories.
Yeah.
This is like alluded to. So maybe that's a good thing. If you're a Mass Effect fan, check out Nexus Uprising.
Yeah. I can also
can use, yeah, go ahead.
I was going to say, the two things I'll quickly mention is that, it's giving me more of a, interest in speaking to Foster Addison, who, you know, is like kind of grumpy when you first encounter her on the Nexus. And
right.
I kind of have a more of an understanding why. So it makes me want to go back and hang out with those characters more. Also, the thing that is really awesome for people that like to listen to audiobooks is that the book is read by, I don't know what we call her, Frider, if you will, is maybe the fan term, but, what is it? Frida Wolf or Frida?
Frida Wolf. Yeah.
Frida Wolf is really
fantastic as Sarah, you know, and like, in this is like the ultimate compliment, but she is very much like, sort of a younger punk rock Jennifer Hale voice. Like,
she does. I was listening to the audiobook and I thought the same thing, and it's the way that she delivers the words. And it's also somewhat in the way that she pronounces certain words. And I feel like that's not an accident that she was cast.
It's really great, and it is, you know, I have not beaten Andromeda yet, but I'm a good ways in, and I've actually really fallen in love with her work, so that makes me want to read this or listen to it even more.
Yeah, also, I thought that would be kind of the clincher for a lot of people, is to learn that it was read by her. I don't know if Frider is the official fan term, but I've seen it used before, so I thought that was appropriate. Someone can correct me if there's a different word for writer, but I thought it was a good term when I saw it. But anyways, if you want to help support the show and listen to this book, you can go to audibletrial.com/ratedNA. If you sign up with Audible, if it's your first time, I believe you'll get a free audiobook download, which you can keep whether or not you decide to stick with Audible, and they have a bunch of different plans. So just choose the one that is right for you and start with listening to Mass Effect Andromeda Nexus Uprising, because that's what I'm doing.
Heck yeah. What's on this show today?
As you may have imagined, we are going to talk about Mass Effect Andromeda. It will be spoiler free. Neither of us have completed the game yet. So, you know, obviously we can't spoil the game up until a certain point because we are ignorant of what happens at a certain point in the game. But I've personally been playing a lot of the multiplayer, so we'll get into that as well. And then we just have a couple of quick news items, and I think that's it, right? Sounds good. Yeah. I think talking about Mass Effect will probably take up a lot of our time, but for our listeners, we will keep it as spoiler free as we possibly can.
Indeed.
Yeah, man.
Let's do it.
Yeah. So what's, we have some pretty awesome news, if I do say so myself.
So yeah, we'll probably have a couple episodes before this event actually occurs, but we are one of the featured podcasts of Star Wars Celebration, which is,
yay,
I guess a big deal. It feels like a big deal. It's pretty cool. There were about a little more than 20 shows chosen to broadcast live from Star Wars Celebration
over the course of it's a pretty big deal, man. I think that's kind of cool.
It is pretty cool. It feels great, you know, to get chosen to be part of this Star Wars Celebration. Star Wars Celebration is honestly one of my favorite cons, just because I'm such a big fan, and it has such a really cool, homey atmosphere. It's just like a very relaxed, like, it's a very chill convention in the best way possible. I think the last celebration I went to had like maybe 40,000 people, which seems like a lot, but if you go to events like Comic-Con and such, they're like 150,000. So it's smaller, right? And yeah.
The thing for people that have not been to Orlando, the Orlando Convention Center rivals, if not surpasses, the size of the San Diego Convention Center.
Right, yeah, it's massive.
It's a smaller show inside of a larger area. So if you know, that's what kind of makes it chill, and then everyone's just kind of there to enjoy Star Wars and share stories and look for things, like do some shopping and stuff, which is fun, and
it's pretty awesome.
Yeah, I saw a proposal there once when I was there. So
did you really?
Yeah, it was like a 501st, you know.
Ooh, nice.
Officially, I don't know if it's officially sanctioned, but it looked pretty official.
The coolest thing I saw there, I saw the premiere episode of one of the seasons of Clone Wars in a big theater, like a movie theater, and like the cast was there too, and like and it was the year that they brought back Darth Maul, so it was the first time he had kind of come back to life. So it was just fantastic. The energy was great, and I just, you know, had a really wonderful time covering it and running around. So
I also remember I don't know if it was you or Matt, but somebody took me to a Robot Chicken panel
Matt took you. Yeah.
Seth Green was there. Cause I, you know, people that listen to the show know that I don't really like to wait in line for things. And Matt was like, come on, it'll be fun. I was like, oh, fine. So, we waited in line for about 2 hours and, you know, enjoyed a beer. But then it turned out that we sat like right in the front of the, arena with Seth Green and company, and got to listen to some stories about Robot Chicken, so that turned out to be cool. So that's the kind of stuff that happens at Star Wars Celebration. And, you know, being here in Orlando, it's now connected to, you know, to things that are happening at Disney over at Hollywood Studios too. So it just kind of becomes like a big event. But they are doing podcasts this year, and we will be one of the featured podcasts. We're actually opening the entire show.
We are.
Which is cool.
We are, like, you know, we're going to kind of set the bar. We're going to set the bar nice and low, and then there we go.
No, this is like, listen, this is how I'm looking at this at this point. We are like, we're a local podcast, right? We're the first to go. I feel like we are the ambassadors to the show for people that are coming from out of town to come to Star Wars Celebration. So I feel like we have an opportunity not only to represent ourselves, but to represent Orlando and sort of welcome everybody to the show as the first podcast to be part of Celebration on that weekend. So that's
actually a very good attitude. And yeah, I hadn't even thought of it that way. That's a cool way of looking at it.
Yeah. And I know what the schedule is. I don't know if we're allowed to say, but, we're also opening for someone too, which I think is kind of interesting as well. So,
We can say,
are we allowed to say? Oh, okay.
Yeah, we can say, Chris Gore's pod crash is on right after us. So that's pretty cool. And I've been watching Chris Gore for, at this point, probably well over a decade. So yeah, it's kind of cool to be on right before him.
Yeah, it's awesome. So we'll have a good time. It'll be fun. Maybe we'll get a guest or two to swing by if we can.
We're working on that right now. But right now, if you are going to Celebration, it's going to be on the 13th of April at 12 o'clock. Look for us on the podcast stage. We'll be there. And I learned today we are allowed to record the show and broadcast it out later. So we will record it and we'll make sure that we share it with you guys as well.
Live show.
Awesome.
Cool.
And hopefully people are there to watch it.
Hey, that's okay. We'll have fun either way. We'll just, we'll do our thing. We'll make it our own. It'll be great.
Yes. I'm excited, man. Cool. It's going to be awesome.
And the other thing is that I would expect maybe the people there will be enthusiastic because it'll be Thursday. And if you're there on a Thursday, you're there. You know what I mean? Like,
that is true.
You are there for the show. Like, you're in it to win it. Right. So that's my take on the situation. So I feel great about it. I'm looking forward to it. I think it'll be fun. Next thing I wanted to quickly talk about is, I didn't want to do like a full review, but I wanted to quickly mention and give some early impressions of a game called Rain World, which is now available for PC and PlayStation. Did you play Rain World with me at PAX Prime, or was that the one that you were otherwise involved?
I've played it at a convention at some point.
Okay.
Cool. I think it in an earlier stage of development, but it was pretty awesome.
Yeah, it's published by Adult Swim Games, and it was probably Sean Baptiste that turned us on, at least turned me on to the game at PAX Prime a couple of years ago. And it's if you haven't seen this game, you really need to check it out and kind of like, you need to see it in motion, I think is probably the best way to describe it. And the way that I sort of wrap my mind around this game is that it almost looks as if the universe from Another World, you know, that old PC game that I love so much, Another World, mm-hmm, where it's all kind of like that weird blocky art style. I imagine this game is existing in that same universe, but many, many years in the future, where everything is kind of overgrown with like different plants and beasts and species and stuff like that. Because what you see in Rain World is this sort of industrialized environment, which has, it looks like it's been, you know, abandoned at times or overtaken by wildlife and mysterious beasts and stuff like this. So you play as Slug Cat, which is also a very, I think, important aspect of the game. It kind of, the choice of the character and the way the character is animated, I think, really shows how a game like this can shine. And a lot of it is based on the survival of Slug Cat. So you are both predator and prey in this kind of weird environment. The map is almost laid out in a Metroidvania style. So you are not really, I don't think it's procedurally generated from what I've seen, because what I've played through was stuff that I remember from the demo that I played a year or two ago. So, but the map is very expansive. You never really know where you're going. You're just kind of fumbling around trying to find your way. And really it's kind of like this character Slug Cat, and the way that it's, you know, built mechanically and animated, that really kind of like sells me on how the game works, because it's one of those games where you kind of like, you figure things out for yourself.
Right.
So you learn like, oh, I can pick up a rock and I can throw that rock at a bug, and then I can eat that bug for food. Right. Cause this is like, cause it's survival. So you're constantly looking for food. You're trying to seek shelter. Like when the rains come, you encounter creatures within the game that you're not really sure what their intentions are, if they're, you know, aggressive or just kind of floating around, or if they will pursue you, if they're just going to leave you alone or whatever. So a lot of it is you just kind of trying to figure out what to do and how to get there. Slug Cat has, it's basically like a cat, if you can imagine how, but the animation is beautiful, right? So you just kind of imagine.
He's like a ferret cat.
Yeah. It's like, it's a slug cat, but the cat does think it's, the animations are cat-like in the sense that it kind of like rolls around and tumbles and can kind of stand up on its legs and jump to things and climb poles and jump to other poles and kind of cling onto walls and stuff like that. And it's just really fascinating, and I just want to play more of it to see where it goes. But I'll probably do, you know, more, you know, more of a full review later on, but I wanted to quickly mention that the game is available for PC and PlayStation. It's called Rain World, and it's super cool, published by Adult Swim Games. Definitely give it a look, and hopefully we'll talk about it again in a couple
weeks. They're just knocking it out of the park these past couple years.
Adult Swim, them. Yeah. I mean, like, I don't know that we talk about this a lot on the show, but we tend to think of, you know, game publishers, and at times even the studios themselves, like almost in the sense of, you know, bands and record labels, right?
Yeah, I mean, it's a good analogy, right?
Because you're starting to see now that, like, these they're like indie labels that are kind of getting bigger, if you will. I don't know that you could call Adult Swim an indie label, because it's, you know, from the TV show, but they pick up these indie games, but they really do a really great job of finding and curating a very eclectic mix of like high quality indie games. Do you think that that's accurate to say?
No, I think you're absolutely right. I think, like, tonally they all match, right? Like, you know, you could see them all in some person's collection, and while they're all completely different, I feel like they have the same pedigree. They're all really well made. They're all kind of quirky and cool, but for different reasons. So you're not going to see, like, a typical, like, military shooter come out of Adult Swim. You'll see, you know, really innovative, creative games with interesting, unique art and interesting music. And I think it's, you know, if you're into really high quality indie stuff, they are the ones that are consistently putting it out. And of course, you know, there are other labels / developers, yeah, or / publishers that are doing, yeah, the same thing. But yeah, I think they're doing a great job.
They have a track record of consistency. And just to your point, like, off the top of my head, four games that are not the same, completely different, but all kind of exist in the same universe, which would be like Rain World, a game you played at this past PAX called Kingsway. And then Jazz Punk, which we really loved a few years ago.
Yeah, Jazz Punk was great.
And then a game that I fell in love with on mobile called Girls Like Robots, right? And these are all published, yeah, by Adult Swim, and all kind of, like, but they all make sense together when you see them all. So it's like, it's worth mentioning.
I even played the Endless Runner Robot Unicorn Attack on the way back from PAX.
Oh, that's right. I remember that too.
I still love Robot Unicorn Attack. It's, yeah, still insanely hard and super fun. So
yeah. So it's stuff like that.
Good stuff.
That's exciting. Cool.
Love those guys. I quickly just need to plug this because it's blowing up right now and I had to start listening to it. But have you heard anything about this podcast called S-Town?
I haven't, but it's by the people that do Serial, right? Is that
right? Yeah. So it's, you know, it's an NPR Serial, This American Life kind of joint. It's hosted by a guy by the name of Brian Reed, who's a investigative journalist. And, I can't spoil anything, but I will give the general premise of what the show's about.
He's not looking for Richard Simmons, is he?
No, he's not. Oh, okay. He's not looking, whew, for Richard Simmons, okay, but there's no Richard Simmons involved in this.
Okay.
But it's insanely, first of all, the quality of production is just unbelievable. Like, these guys, when they go and do investigative journalism or go and, like, record a podcast, he's recording for, like, years of time. And I can't even imagine how many hundreds of hours of audio he has before he, you know, puts it all together to actually make a story. But S-Town's all out now. There's 7 episodes total. And it involves Brian Reed going to this small town in Alabama because he gets an email sort of out of the blue from a listener that says, hey, like, there was a murder in my small town. The local, you know, sheriff's office and the government here has covered up the murder. The guy that murdered the other guy is walking free and, you know, nothing bad happened to him. You should really come here and check out this shitty town. So that the podcast is called S Town because it's a shitty town. So, that's what it's all about. So it's all about, you know, Brian Reed going down to this small town and, talking to this really interesting cast of characters from Alabama and trying to unravel this mystery. And I'll just say, about 2 episodes in, the entire theme of what the podcast is about and what is going on completely flips. And it does, like, a total M. Night Shyamalan, like,
wow,
like a major, like, reality twist.
What a twist.
Yeah, it's unbelievable. So I don't want to give too much away, but I just want to tell you, like, if you're into a great story with great characters that just happen to be real people and very, very compelling, very, a very unique slice of life. Like, if you've never spent time with someone from the Deep South that is perhaps impoverished. You can actually hear them talk for great lengths of time on this particular podcast, and kind of get a feeling about, you know, what their lives are like and, you know, what goes on in a day-to-day sort of situation for folks like that. That being said, all seven episodes are out. I'm about halfway through it now, just listening to it when I drive, and, can't get enough. It's beautifully, beautifully produced and just beyond, beyond compelling. So check out S-Town. If you do check it out, please let us know on Twitter at NerdAppropriate. Say, hey, I checked it out. I liked it or I didn't like it, but I want to talk about it with people. So
cool.
So let me know.
It sounds like some like real life True Detective kind of stuff.
It's really, really good, man. Yeah. It really is. And there's like the characters are just, you know, just so like the main guy, John McLemore, is, he's a clockmaker. He's incredibly eccentric, but he's also a super genius. And he's the one who wrote into Brian Reed about this murder.
Nice.
And he has like a, you know, his level of knowledge about all things is just sort of off the chart. So he knows all about different chemicals and different, you know, the chemical makeups of different, you know, atoms and all this sorts of crazy stuff that he just spouts out, you know, in conversation, and, you know, builds clocks. And it's just this weird kind of off the wall character that, you know, is, I think he's going to kind of go down in podcast history as one of the most interesting characters. So,
amazing. That sounds great.
It's really, really good
super
stuff.
Cool, man. Good pick.
This is Alex Wilson-Regan, and you're listening to the Rated NA podcast at nerdappropriate.com. Don't forget your toothbrush.
All right, so Mass Effect Andromeda, it's out. We have waited 5 long years. The funny thing is I actually remember I have a couple things saved on my hard drive. I went to a panel at San Diego Comic-Con in 2014. Where they hadn't even named the game yet. At the time, it was still, people thought it was going to be Mass Effect 4. And some of the earliest photos of the Nomad and stuff came out at that Comic-Con.
Oh, wow.
So that was, you know, at this point, 3-ish years ago, and the game was still in very, you know, early stages of development at that time. But it's been a long 5 years since Mass Effect 3, and we're currently playing it. I guess full disclosure, And I guess explanation of how we're going to review this, we're going to do as spoiler free as possible. There probably will be mild or light spoilers just based on, you know, some context, but we're not going to spoil any major plot stuff. Also, I am not completely done with the game yet. I want to say at this point I'm 35 hours in.
Do you know what does your completion say? What does your game completion say?
I don't know. I haven't looked at it in a while.
Mine's probably hovering around 30%. So I'm sure many of the people listening to this show are further ahead than we are.
Yes.
Much further. Yep.
Yes. I think a lot of people have at this point finished it, and you know, there's reasons as to why I have not, but there are reasons.
I can tell you exactly why I haven't finished it. So
yeah.
You know, personally I'm playing on Insanity because I enjoy the challenge of playing it that way the first time. And, you know, before you go, oh, you're playing on Sanity. I played Dragon Age on casual. So this is just kind of like, Mass Effect is kind of a game that I have been able to wrap my brain around in a way that I was not able to do with something like with Dragon Age. And I kind of just ended up playing that game for the enjoyment of it. But I like to challenge myself in this series. So I'm finding that to be the case. So
yeah, it's hard. I mean, I started out in hardcore and I switched it down to normal for, I would say, a good 3 or 4 hours at a certain point, 'cause I died too many times, and then I've been back on hardcore for the rest of it. But there's a time early on, which I guess we can talk about, where you don't really have many abilities, and the enemies are incredibly challenging. So unless you're Scott, who is sort of a savant.
I'm just persistent.
Well, that, and you're honestly just like really good at these games. So like if you're not really good at these games, the first couple hours on hardcore or on Insanity are going to be very challenging, as they should be. I mean, you know, the reason I switched it back to hardcore is because I was just, once I got to a certain point on normal, I was just unstoppable. And I was like, okay, this isn't fun anymore. Normal's, you know, too easy. So hardcore is sort of what I'm sticking to. And I still die on occasion on hardcore just for being overzealous. But so let's talk a little bit about the narrative of Mass Effect Andromeda. And we're going to kind of talk, we're going to talk to a wide audience here because we probably do have some listeners that haven't played the Mass Effect series. So if you are a Mass Effect super fan, you're going to be like, oh, why are they explaining like this basic stuff? But you know, this is a show for everyone. So let's kind of break down what is really going on.
Yeah, for sure.
I guess the earliest, I guess where we should really start is about, when this takes place in the timeline. So this actually takes place before the events of Mass Effect 3. And that was actually a really smart move for the folks at BioWare because, Mass Effect 3 ended differently for everyone, with major kind of world and universe altering events happening at the end of Mass Effect 3. You know, meaning that there is something major, you know, that would occur that would alter how this game was played if it took place in the same galaxy and if it took place in the timeline. So
I also feel like it would not have even made any sense. I don't even think it would have been plausible given the end of the original trilogy to have something like this occur after that, you know?
Right.
Like I think the project would have been scrapped, like just to be blunt about it, you know?
Right. Yeah. So what the Andromeda Initiative is, it was an independent project formed outside of the Alliance. The Alliance is sort of like, you got to think of them like Star Trek. And this is, again, for listeners that don't really know what's going on. They're sort of like the Council of Worlds that get together and, you know, and make big decisions. And this Andromeda Initiative exists outside of the Alliance. It's independently funded, and you could actually buy into it. If you are rich enough, you could actually go on this Andromeda Initiative. And what it did is it took you to an all new galaxy that was about 600 light years away. And once you got there, you know, the world was your oyster and you could start over. And the reason that you're of course leaving and everyone's leaving is because they don't actually really touch on this in Andromeda, which I found shocking, but the Reapers were coming, which were like, you know, the end of the universe, the end of the galaxy. And people said, if we don't get out of here, that's it. Like all life is going to end. So they create these arcs, similar to Noah's Ark, and they head off in search of, you know, a brand new galaxy and a brand new start. And they find, what was it? 7 golden worlds.
That's what I think they explained it somewhere that they were somehow able to use a Mass Effect relay to gather intelligence on the galaxy before they set out on their journey. So they identified 7 what they call to be golden worlds, which are, you know, habitable and, you know, potentially, you know, available to them to establish new colonies and outposts and basically start a new life for themselves on those planets. So that was the plan when they left, you know, the Milky Way galaxy was to seek out these 7 worlds and decide, you know, where to settle down.
Right. And of course they don't know what the worlds are like at all. And that's part of what your job is as the Pathfinder. You're sort of the leader of, you know, there's one Pathfinder for each race. At least not all the races, which is something I guess we'll touch on a little bit. There's one Pathfinder for each race, and those Pathfinders are sort of supposed to be the I wouldn't say the leaders, but I would say like the people that lead the away team to discover and kind of, colonize these new worlds. And they're supposed to be like the face of their race when they are introduced to potential, you know, threats and alien species. So they're like the best of the best, which is the role that you play in Mass Effect Andromeda. So,
yes.
So I'll just start. I'll ask you a couple of questions. How are you enjoying the narrative at this point, where you are in the game compared to the, I guess we could compare it to the other Mass Effect games, but also just out of curiosity, like, are you enjoying the narrative right now?
Well, I think it's important to note that this game kind of goes into like a much more open world scenario as far as the planetary exploration goes. And so I think what that does in essence is that it kind of takes what, you know, is still a linear narrative, but it really kind of presents it in a broader waterfront, you know? So what I'm finding that I'm doing with this game is that, you know, of course I am following the story, what the critical path is, but at the same time, I'm kind of just enjoying existing in the universe because it's a universe that I enjoy. And I really just like to, you know, it's a whole new group of people that you can interact with in a whole new set of space stations and planets and different, you know, outposts to go explore and talk to people. So as far as the narrative goes, what I really find like I'm doing is that you kind of go, you know, to all these, you know, ancillary characters that are scattered around all the different locations. You kind of talk to them, you learn what their story is. You know, I think a question that, your character asks of every single person they meet is like, why did you join the initiative? And so you kind of, through these very small stories that you get from the people that you meet on your journey, you really start to kind of like paint in piece by piece what the kind of the larger tapestry is of this narrative. Does that make sense?
No, it totally makes sense. And, you know, I think what you're touching on, the fact that, hey, it's another Mass Effect game and I really like the Mass Effect universe. Like, I don't know that you would understand a lot there. I think there would be a lot that if you had never played a Mass Effect game before, you would be really confused, because there are a lot of different alien races and they're all alien races that were introduced in prior Mass Effect games. Right. So if you were coming into this fresh and being like, oh, like, you know, they're in this new galaxy, where are all the alien races? You would have no clue which ones were from the Milky Way galaxy and which ones were from the Andromeda galaxy.
Yeah.
Unless you had, you know, prior knowledge of that. So there's a lot of things like that.
Yeah. And I'm pretty sure there's maybe like what I've heard to be maybe one single line of dialogue that describes like where other races are from the Milky Way galaxy and why they either are or are not in the game presently, you know?
Right. No, we can touch on that while we're talking about it. At least, I mean, this isn't a spoiler, but I have not seen a Volus, a Hanar. I haven't seen Vorcha.
But I've heard the explanation. That's what I'm saying.
See, I have not heard the explanation. Yeah, okay. Yet. And if I did, I skipped it. But you know, they are not present, which is means they're either still frozen someplace in pods, or they just didn't come along for the ride, which means that someone in the Andromeda Initiative decided that they were not worthy to go to this new galaxy, which is kind of problematic in its own way. So we'll touch on that stuff in a little bit.
But
too.
I mean, if you get to the end of the game, you don't find it, I'll tell you like what the situation is, but I won't tell you now. How's that?
Yeah, that works. That works.
Yeah, but if you want to talk about the sort of the narrow part of the narrative, which is, you know, globally, the human race is on the Ark Hyperion, and the idea is that the Nexus would arrive, which is meant to be sort of a centralized hub for, you know, for all the races that are part of the initiative to kind of congregate and, you know, barter and do business. And it's also meant to be a space where, you know, any other aliens or tribes or cultures that are encountered in the Andromeda galaxy could kind of come to interact with the, you know, Milky Way galaxy, almost like a like an embassy, you know what I mean?
Right.
So it's meant to have many functions, but it's meant to sort of be the hub of the Andromeda Initiative. And the idea is that the other arcs would all arrive and sort of dock with the Nexus, and that would provide, you know, resources and power and things of that nature. And you know, at that point, all the Pathfinders would set out to examine these worlds and, you know, find the ones that were appropriate to live on. But as you can imagine, things don't always go as planned when you take a 600-year trip across the galaxy, and then shenanigans ensue, and now you're just kind of trying to deal with the aftermath and this kind of like threat, this kind of like an omnipresent threat that you encounter that's not like an immediate threat, but it's like, oh, this is not what we thought it would be when we left, you know? So I think,
right.
I think in a very narrow way, that's kind of like the elevator pitch for the narrative. If you're not even, you know, familiar with the universe, is that like, you know, culture, these, you know, this whole, you know, conglomerate from Milky Way travels across the galaxy to Andromeda. And now they're kind of dealing with what that means to travel across the galaxy and try to settle down in a new place.
Right. And there are problems there that the indigenous races have been dealing with prior to your arrival. Right. So there's already problems that are occurring in the Andromeda Galaxy before you get there. And of course, when you get there and you show up with like five or six new alien races, all with their own motivations, things are going to get a little bit more complicated and a little bit more messy. So you're kind of dealing with like a lot of internal problems that are happening with the initiative, and then also these problems that you encounter from the, you know, indigenous population of Andromeda, which I think is cool. My qualm with it is I really wish I would have gotten to see it when they first got there, because you kind of show up like the human arc shows up late. Which I don't know if that's a spoiler or not, maybe a little bit, but the human arc shows up late. And when you get there, a lot of stuff Happened already,
which is in the audiobook that we
mentioned. Which is in the audiobook. Yeah. So Nexus Uprising, yeah. If you want to see what happened at the early part of it. But so it sort of feels like you show up to the party late. And so when you get there and you're talking to people, everyone's like, this thing happened. And then this thing happened and it was crazy. And you're like, oh, I didn't see any of that. You're like, I kind of wish I would have seen that. But I guess you're sort of experiencing these new events, throughout the course of the narrative. Other than that, I'm enjoying it. Like, I think, I played through, if you listen to the last episode, I played through the EA Access trial, I think 3 times in total. So I played the beginning of the game at this point, about maybe 4 times total. And I want to say the first 10 hours are the rockiest, for a variety of reasons. Like, I just think the pacing is a little bit wonky, and I don't think the initial hook, once you get to the first planet that you can land on, I don't think the initial hook is the best. But that being said, once you get beyond, once you get beyond that first planet, once you get beyond Eos, like
once the training wheels come off, right?
Then I started having a ton of fun, and I feel like as I'm progressing more and more into the story, I'm having more and more and more fun, to the point where, like, I'm staying up super late and being irresponsible and, not sleeping all that I should sleep, and, like, sure, staying up late playing. In that, that's when you can tell, like, you're having fun with the game, when you're being irresponsible. So, other than that, I think the highlights for me so far, have definitely been the critical path. I'm really enjoying, like, the main storyline is great when you get to a big story mission. There have been some really, really fantastic stories. And also the loyalty missions have just been really, really kind of off the charts great. Obviously you encounter a variety of different people. Some of them you know from the very beginning of the game. Some of them you pick up in typical RPG fashion. And they all have, their own things going on. You get to know them just like any Mass Effect game. And then eventually you'll get to do a fun loyalty mission for them, which gives you some unlock abilities. And also you get to experience a really badass piece of narrative, which is, they've all been great. I think I've done 3 loyalty missions at this point, and they've all been really fantastic. They're the best.
That's like, cool.
You're gonna love them. They're hard, I can't imagine on Insanity.
I mean, it should be clear at this point that I'm on like a really slow burn of this game. You know what I mean? But that being said, I am enjoying it. So I'm looking forward to those loyalty missions. I think part of that, probably part of the reason why I haven't seen one yet, is because I think we discussed this offline, but we are doing things in a slightly different order. And I think that contributes to why I haven't seen any of them yet, without saying too much about it.
Right. I mean, also, like, one of the things, because we're about to talk about exploration, like, this is a really big open world game. So, one thing I read early on from a review was that, you shouldn't try and do every single side mission. You should definitely kind of jump around, because they don't really penalize you for doing that. So you can get in your ship and you can go and explore, and you can go mining, or you can go and complete side quests, or you can go and do critical path for a while, and then you can come back to different planets and do different things. So if you're not enjoying something, because every aspect of this game is not completely enjoyable, if you're not enjoying something, then you should leave and do something else. And that's kind of what I've been doing. So I'll jump from a story mission to doing like an hour and a half of just conversations with people on the space station, to going out and mining for an hour. Basically, like, there's so many systems and so much to do, including crafting and a million other things in this game, that it's, I think it's easy to get bogged down. And, the thing that's kind of keeping me sane is realizing that, there's New Game Plus. I don't have to 100% everything the first go through. Mm-hmm. I can just enjoy it and explore and do a little bit of everything. And then, that will be my first experience. Right. So,
yeah, absolutely. And as far as exploration goes, what I'm finding is that when I actually do some stuff on a planet and then I leave and go do some other stuff, when I come back to that original planet, I find that I'm enjoying it in a new way. So, when you first come to a planet, you don't know what to expect and everything is sort of unknown. Maybe you're taking it easy. You're being careful, I guess. Mm-hmm. And then once I get out into the universe and do a couple other things and level up, of course, and get better weapons and stuff, when I come back to some of these original planets, now I kind of feel like more of a badass and I'm ready to tackle the challenges. on those planets. And on the first planet that you encounter, especially on the insanity difficulty, it's very easy to kind of get into trouble very quickly, especially if you try to raid like an enemy encampment that is, that you'll, you know, randomly, semi-randomly encounter while you're driving around and stuff like that. And, and so that really kind of slowed down my progress, on that first planet. But now, you know, coming back to it, after having done a couple other things, it's almost like we're like a, you know, like an elite strike team, you know what I mean? We kind of roll up in the Nomad and everyone kind of scatters and we raid the facility and then collect all the loot. And then we're back in the Nomad, we're driving away. Right. So it's like a, it's like a totally different game at this point. And that's kind of, for me, what's exciting.
So let me ask you this. Are you enjoying the exploration part of it? Like, do you find driving around the Nomad and stuff to be enjoyable?
I do.
Is that something you like?
I do. And maybe something that we should mention is that, like, for me personally, and I don't know, I mean, maybe other people feel this way, maybe not, but for me personally, I feel like this game has more in common with Mass Effect 1 than it does maybe 2 or 3. Do you think that that's fair to say?
Yeah, I would say definitely.
Right.
And I think, honestly, I think that's what they were going for. I think they wanted to recapture the tone and the flavor of Mass Effect 1. Mm-hmm. And, you know, almost, I don't want to say pull in episode 7, but you know, there's a lot of things, a lot of tone, like themes and tones that are,
well, I think that's fair. And I've said this many times on previous podcasts, but the thing, for as great as Mass Effect 2 and 3 were, the thing that I thought was missing from those games is that, everything that was like amazing and wonderful about exploring the universe was kind of taken for granted in 2 or 3. Like, all of a sudden the universe had become like the Star Wars universe where it was lived in. And, you know, you were just kind of there and it was sort of your job and you were going to your job and just kind of taking care of trouble. Right. In the original Mass Effect, everything was new and everything was, you know, scary and dangerous and uncharted. And I feel like that's kind of what you're getting more of in Mass Effect Andromeda, is because, the game sets you up to really just sort of be on your own. You have to remember that, you know, Shepard was already an established badass right at the beginning of Mass Effect 1. Like, this person was already an elite, you know, an elite soldier, right, who was only destined for more greatness, right? Mm-hmm. But your team in Andromeda is largely untested, right? You kind of don't have that safety net of kind of the legend of your team, of your experience as you arrive on these planets. You're just kind of you're figuring things out along, you know, at the same time that your crew is, if that makes any sense. So
no, yeah. I like that aspect of it too. I mean, you are, you know, a lot more green, and, you know, there is some great stuff early on that kind of shows, you obviously how you take over as Pathfinder. There's a little bit of that. And of course your first mission doesn't go all that well. So they do a great job of kind of making you feel very small in a place that's very big. And I told you guys this over Slack, but I really kind of feel like the first trilogy, and you kind of touched on this, but the first Mass Effect trilogy was very Star Wars in tone.
Mm-hmm. Yes.
You know, with this big bad empire coming to destroy everything. And, you know, this ragtag bunch of badasses kind of banding together. And this feels much more like Star Trek Next Generation-esque, where you're boldly exploring and discovering new things, and it's a lot more clean and crisp looking, and a lot of the designs, even in the initial armor sets and stuff, are just like white and very, like, you know, very Apple. And I think that's, you know, that is very different, and some people will really like that, and other people, I think, will really want the grittier, darker, you know, kind of scum and villainy of the original trilogy.
I mean, the thing that kind of solidified it for me as far as the team goes is that very early on in the game, you return from one of your initial missions and you almost hold like a meeting to discuss it, you know? And, it's very like ragtag. It's thrown together. You can tell that the team is like, they don't even really like, everybody doesn't even necessarily like respect you. It's like, you can't even control your own team. And then everyone kind of wanders off and your character's like, well, that was a good meeting. You know, it's like,
yeah.
But like almost optimistically, even though like it was kind of like a total mess, you know, but I kind of like that aspect of your whole team being like something of a mess. Right. To me, it feels like you're playing as the female and I'm playing as, as the male because his name is Scott, and I felt like I had to. But to me, he kind of feels like a very young Malcolm Reynolds. You know what I mean? Like, it's very...
Oh, that's cool.
You know what I mean? Like, he's kind of... It's like cavalier. Like, he's, you know, like, he's young. And my, you know, I play my character as sort of like cavalier and jokey, but, you know, serious at the right times. And so it just kind of feels like you're just kind of trying to hold it all together. Is that kind of...
Yeah, yeah. I think Sarah's similar. I think they have different backgrounds and they do react differently to situations. So the Sarah Ryder that I'm playing is like, you know, she used to do research on Prothean artifacts. So she's a bit of a brainiac, but she's also like, the way I play her is just like a total smart ass. So it's very interesting. And Freda Wolf's delivery is spot on. Like, she does smart ass very, very well. She swears on occasion, which I think is really cool. Like, that's just, not that swearing is cool, yeah, but the fact that the character can swear and can be crass, I think is pretty awesome.
I can tell you, 'cause I played a little bit as Sarah, that the two characters, the brother and the sister, are really completely different. And I even heard some of the same lines of dialogue delivered by both actors, but they were both delivered in a way that conveyed a completely different context for the comment, which I thought was really interesting. And in case you didn't play as the male at all, the Scott Ryder character, his prior job before joining the Initiative is that he used to guard a Mass Effect relay. So the characters are actually really different, and not just like, you know, oh, you can play as male or female. You can actually play as a very different brother or sister. Like, you know,
that's cool. Game. Yeah. So the thing that I think is really interesting is that you're playing as Sarah. She brings up her own personal origin story several times during the narrative, and actually, you know, talks about the things she's experienced and relates them to what's going on in the game. So I think it's going to be neat to play through it a second time.
Mm-hmm, absolutely.
And see how it is different. And, you know, that's cool. I think that's really great that they did that. And that's a huge undertaking to really make everything that different. So yeah,
I definitely, just from the few hours that I played of both, I think that I agree that a second playthrough would be warranted, with the other character that you didn't play through with your first time. So
that's really
cool. Let's talk about combat a little bit.
Yeah, so I'm enjoying combat this time a lot.
Tell me what you're playing as. Maybe we should describe like what is different, maybe the main thing that's different about this combat system from the previous ones.
So I guess right now, I think the thing that's different is the fact that you can spec yourself any way that you want and change it out on the fly at any time.
Yeah, basically get the whole character sheet. So you don't just, like in the previous games, you'd pick a class. That class would have a set of abilities and you'd put points into those abilities. In Andromeda, they just go like, well, here's all the skills in the game. You allocate your points the way you see fit.
Right. And if you think about it from like a nerdy, like D&D perspective, that means like you could pick like a wizard ability with a ranger ability. And it's not that different in Andromeda. Like, if you really want to, like, I'll tell you the spec that I am now. So I'm an infiltrator. And my main, I guess, what is it called? Not your specialization, but
it's not the profile, but it's the, I lost the word.
I lost the word too. So basically you can pick from a variety of different, we'll call them profiles, mm-hmm, and they give you special bonuses based on the number of, other abilities you have from that same set. So for instance, if I pick, infiltrator, and then all of a sudden I get, you know, I take tactical cloak and I take sticky bomb and I take, you know, others from that set, I get more and more bonuses inside the infiltrator tree. Yes, and I get better and better and better.
You do get rewards for synergies. Yeah.
Right. So, right now I'm playing as an infiltrator and I have, obviously tactical cloak's main ability. And then I have,
It is profiles.
Profiles. Mm-hmm. Okay.
Yeah.
Ability that steals shields. I forget what that's called. Shield drain, maybe.
Yep.
Energy drain. And then I actually have an ability from combat. It's the, oh my God, I'm brain farting everything. But the concussive shot.
Oh, concussive shot.
Concussive shot. So
you can never go wrong with that ability. I think that's always an appropriate ability to have for any reason.
Oh no, it's awesome, especially as a sniper, because you can use it when you're scoped. So you can
fire it from like a million miles away.
Yeah, you can fire it while you're scoping an enemy from a million miles away. Yeah. So you can, you know, fire off a sniper round and then fire off a concussive shot and just send a guy flying a mile, which is just great. And the way that I have my energy drain spec is it's both, it primes them and explodes the prime. Yeah. So you can actually prime them with your energy drain and get some shields back, and then hit them with a concussive blast, and it'll do this massive explosion. Or if one of your enemy, if one of your allies, you know, does something that primes them, you can shield drain and then explode the prime as well. So that's the main build that I'm using right now. And of course, I have tons and tons of points into my combat, so I can carry more stuff, and so I can do more damage with headshots and things like that. Nice. So I'm mainly a ranged fighter, but I have 4 guns on me now that I carry, and still have 100% recharge speed.
Wow, that's amazing.
Yeah, so I have 2 pistols, I built a Typhoon rifle that shoots grenades. So if that makes any sense, it's a 74-round magazine. And so I can shoot 74 grenades out of this rifle in probably like 30 seconds. And it's basically just looks like Apocalypse Now. And then I have a big Black Widow sniper rifle. So it's fun. It's just basically, you know, sit at a distance and lay waste to stuff. What about you?
I guess because of the difficulty, I kind of chickened out on playing my traditional Vanguard build for Mass Effect. And just sort of by circumstance, I ended up almost going entirely the engineer route, which I've never done before, but I'm really finding to be very enjoyable. My starting strategy for the game is that I took, because when you start, you can pick one of the base, I guess, profile classes to start with, because it gives you a starting ability. So having played previous games, I knew that Overload was sort of a invaluable ability to have, because when you would encounter shielded enemies early on, you really needed something to peel those shields away so that your teammates can take care of the enemies, right? So ended up taking Overload, and at this point it's almost like maxed out, which is really fun too. But I'm kind of playing as a whereas you like to be more ranged in your playthrough, I like to be sort of more of a mid-range to close fighter. So I'm almost spec'd out for kind of like close quarters combat, if you can imagine. Okay. like it's almost like urban operations combat, you know?
Right.
So my primary weapon is an assault rifle. I was really hoping that the saber would make an appearance in the game from Mass Effect 3, because that's my favorite, but I took a weapon that was pretty similar to that, which is the, starts with a V, and I can't remember the name of it, but there's like a N7, you know, like an ultra rare.
The Valiant?
Thank you. Yeah, the Valiant. So because it fires like, it's got like maybe like a 10 magazine clip, but it fires one round at a time. Okay. So it's almost like a sniper rifle, but it's like a little faster and a little more appropriate for mid-range combat. So I ended up taking that and then kind of putting a lot of points into defense so that I could stay up longer.
And which then, you need for yeah, insanity, right?
Yeah. So I'm kind of like tailoring my character to the situation, right? So and then I put a lot of points early on into Incinerate and Overload for the same reason you did, which is to prime and detonate to get those tech combos, because that's really where the secret sauce is at in Mass Effect, is like, you know, letting your team or yourself set up the combos and then detonate them for extra damage. So that's the story. And I'm slowly putting in more points into the adept profile so that I can do things like pull and throw. I do like to kind of hunt for achievements while I'm playing the game. So there were some ability specific achievements that I tracked down in the course of playing the game. One of them was really fun, which was, you know, picking up enemies and then throwing them into other enemies.
That's cool.
Yeah. So I did that one. There was, an achievement that I really liked because I thought of it before the game came out, and it turned out that they put an achievement to it, which is, you know, on the tone of combining things that you couldn't combine before, there was an achievement for going into tactical cloak and then coming out of that in a Vanguard charge, right? So you could kind of be like a ninja at that point, where you could become invisible, sneak around the battlefield, and then charge in and like beat someone up, which was never possible in Mass Effect 3 because those two things didn't exist in the same skill tree. So
the level of insanity that you can create is really kind of unbelievable. Like I was doing, what did I do that? Oh, I had pull. I was just playing around and I put some points in adept as well. Mm. I did pull, like group area of effect pull. And then I did concussive shot. So you could like pull and they'd be floating and hit them concussion shot, and they would just go flying like into orbit.
Like it was all explode.
Yeah, it was like the silliest thing ever. I was like, oh, this is just fun.
Yeah. So I think that's the fun part of this combat, is that if you kind of need to take a little bit of time to read through some of the skill trees, but if you really kind of like buckle down and look at them, you can really come up with some really interesting scenarios. And I even gave, like, I basically built a sentinel or a, I don't know, it's kind of, because it's like an adept and an engineer, but I basically built an engineer with a biotic barrier, you know, to even further increase my survivability, I guess. Which is really fun too. So
yeah, I have barrier on my character now too, just because it's so great to have those extra shields mm-hmm. and health regeneration and stuff. So
yeah. So a lot of it is me like sneaking around, you know, peeling off, you know, shields and armor so that my squad can then take care of the squishy guys afterwards. So I'm really having fun with that. And I really had fun like exploring through a lot of those achievements, because now you can jump and you can hover, you can dash, and the whole thing kind of like speeds up the combat in the game and makes you super fast, which is really fun too. And you can you know, you can fire while you're hovering, so you can kind of like, if you don't have the high ground, you can kind of become the high ground and then, you know, discharge your abilities and then move on to something else, which is fun too. So
yeah, there's a lot of different tactical options now. I do have to say, for me though, I'm still enjoying good old fashioned hide behind a wall and shoot mechanics. I do enjoy the hover and the dash and stuff like that, but it's a good way to get your ass handed to you on harder difficulties.
Yeah.
So, you know, being in cover is still really important. And I also, I enjoy fighting indoors much more than I enjoy fighting outside in the open world.
I don't really
love that open combat of, you know, seeing a base out in the distance and rolling up in the Nomad and hopping out. And it feels very, very chaotic for me. And I think like the more scripted encounters, like out in the, or scripted encounters in the critical path and loyalty missions, I think, are much more fun. So those are just great. And also the ones inside the vaults are fun as well. So inside fighting is where it's at.
Yeah. And I mean, like, I think that's what I was trying to get at with the way I spec my character, but that's also what I was talking about, where I turned those open, you know, open air fights into closed quarters combat by basically just driving the Nomad straight up to the door and then having the team hop out and we just start fighting, you know, door to door, rock to rock kind of thing. So
I
think that helps it out. If you start at a distance, they all just kind of like, you aggro everybody at the same time, and then they all just kind of shoot at you from a distance, and then you can never close the distance. And I think that's where you get into trouble. But I think we've played a lot of Mass Effect, and I think that's kind of gives us an edge and kind of understanding a lot of the abilities up front without having to take everything in new. So
right. It's good. I mean, the final thoughts on combat is it is good. It's very sound, and the ability to craft your own weapons and armor is awesome. It takes a while. It took me a while to figure out what the heck to do. I don't think it's the most user-friendly system, but once you figure it out, it is really, really cool. I think it's too difficult to craft stuff. Like some of the materials needed to craft some of the items are like, you just don't get them often enough to like experiment with, because mm-hmm. you never know what you're going to build, right? Like, so I built that Typhoon rifle with grenade rounds, but I didn't know how it would perform. Like, you mm-hmm. know, like I had no idea. And that was something that took me a ton of materials and a ton of research to be able to build that. So you don't really know what you're going to get ahead of time.
Yeah, I wish you did. I ended up putting the grenade rounds on the Valiant and then ultimately reloaded the save and took them off because I didn't like the way, because then there was kind of like a bullet drop, you know, on the grenades.
Yeah,
right?
It was so, bullet drop and the grenades bounce. So it was like, you know, it turned the gun into just basically like something from Saints Row. It was just insane.
Yeah, it's true.
And it was just like, seriously, like 75 grenades bouncing all over the damn room, and like half of them don't hit your target. And I was just like, oh, well, I wasn't smart enough to reload. So I just kind of stuck with it and used it for a while. I ended up dismantling it.
Yeah, but there's three separate classes of things to craft from different factions found within the game. So I would say that if, you know, for those that are out there maybe having trouble with the combat or wanting to try a different difficulty level but not really sure about it, I would also encourage people to go out and play multiplayer and just kind of like try the abilities in a space where you can kind of like learn them three at a time And then, you know, when you come back to the single player game, it kind of gives you a fresh perspective on kind of like how, because those synergies are already kind of set up in some of those multiplayer characters, and it kind of gives you some perspective on how to build a character of your own in the single player game.
Right. Well, let's talk for a few minutes about multiplayer, because you've played quite a bit of it. I've only probably played a couple hours at this point, but I did really have a blast playing what I played. So I think the major difference this time is it's now 7 rounds.
Yeah. Yeah. So like in Mass Effect 3, the multiplayer was 10 rounds with, I think it was like 3 objective based rounds scattered through in there. And then wave 10, of course, was the extraction round. So they reduced that down to 7, which means that you only have 2 objective rounds, which occur, I think, at, that would be, what is that, 3 and 7 or 3 and 6?
Yeah, 3 and 6.
Are your objective rounds, and then 7 is extraction. And then, of course, all of the maps are different because they added the ability to do your boost jump as well as your dash, right? So the levels have a verticality to them that was not present in, not so much in the original Mass Effect 3 multiplayer. And really what that translates to is not, you're not necessarily going to be jumping and hovering in the battlefield, because that's a great way to get killed very quickly. But, you know, people, I don't think a lot of people remember Mass Effect 3. Sometimes you'd have to climb a ladder, like in the middle of a match.
Yep. Yep.
To get to higher ground, which is devastating, kind of put the brakes on the action at the same time. So, now you can just kind of like run up to a ledge and jump and you're there. Right. And then you kind of get behind some cover and keep shooting, right? So the multiplayer is much faster. It's sort of much more dynamic. I really think they took note of things that we were doing in the original multiplayer with, like, you know, Fort Kickass and stuff like that, and kind of like designed it out of the game so that you couldn't really do that so much.
Yeah, there's very little like stay in one spot anymore. Although the match I played last with you last night, I spent the entire match, I flew up as high as I could go and kept climbing. Mm-hmm. I was on top of like the tippy top of a building, and you guys were running around killing stuff, and I was just sitting there with like a widow rifle.
Yeah.
And just, I played like the role of like Overwatch the whole time. Like if an enemy picked his head out, I would just snipe him, and it was so much fun because like I was largely ignored, and I could put on tactical cloak, and then they would drop aggro from me.
Yes.
And so I could stay up there for a really long time and just kind of watch over you guys from like a sniper's nest.
That's awesome.
And that was really cool, because I was like, I spent the whole, all 7 rounds at the top of this little little area that was just perfect.
I do appreciate the way in multiplayer that you, as a singular person on your team, can actually turn the tide if you position yourself in the right place in the game, because there were times like, so I, you know, from one of the first characters I unlocked was a Krogan Vanguard, right? So right off the bat, you're kind of like, you're the tip of the spear, you're the tank, you know, you're the one that's supposed to disrupt, you know, enemy plans on the battlefield. And so, you know, when it came to an objective where we needed to, you know, stand in one place or disarm a device, without being interfered with by enemies, like I was able to move up to a forward position and kind of just hold the line, right? And the enemies don't just charge past you to get to the objective. They'll actually stand there and fight you. So you really do have opportunities to work tactically in multiplayer with your teammates. You can kind of like segment the battlefield and lock down different lanes on the maps. And it really does become sort of more of a tactical experience when you have a group of people that can all work together, which is kind of the tricky thing to do in multiplayer. But I think,
yeah, it's super fun. Like it feels great. Like I, you know, played with you last night for a number of hours, and you know, I didn't encounter any bugs, and we just like we plowed through some matches. It was so much fun.
I think you and I nearly completed a bronze match, just the two of us. I think some people dropped in during wave 7, the extraction.
But yeah, we were already on extraction by the time they got there though. So
yeah, but for the most part we did it. That which is really awesome, good for us. There's only, at this point, there are only 3 difficulty levels. There's just, right, am I right about that? Bronze, silver, yeah. Gold. Uh-huh. There's no platinum yet. I would imagine that maybe later on down the line there will be. I can also say that multiplayer is already sort of a live activity, meaning that you know, right off the bat from week 1, they were doing multiplayer challenges, which is something they started back in Mass Effect 3, but they're kind of more formalized, and they kind of sync up with some of the special Apex missions as well. If you're using the Apex app, which everybody should be, if you're playing even single player, you can get a bunch of weapons and resources from the Apex app. But, you know, there was the first weekend that the game was out, they introduced a new map, which was only playable for the special challenge mission. They introduced a new character to unlock in the packs and a new melee weapon, which was like a Krogan hammer that you could unlock in the packs. And then in week number two, which was this past weekend, they did a challenge in which they revealed I can't say too much without spoiling parts of the other game, but basically a Super Krogan soldier could appear in your challenge match, which I did not see, thankfully, but that appeared as well. And maybe the other new addition to multiplayer is that now there is permanent equipment. I don't think that was in Mass Effect 3. You can get permanent equipment for your characters. So, and it's equipped in the same place where you equip your weapons. So you could equip, you know, an assault rifle. And then the thing that came out this past weekend was a Juggernaut shield, which is like a gigantic Krogan shield that increases your melee damage and then gives a small boost to shields as well. So it kind of adds another dimension to how you can build your characters in multiplayer. And it really just like, I like playing multiplayer because it really gives you a chance to explore all of the different combat paths in the game. And then it's also all of that same stuff that you like about any multiplayer experience, where it's like you play the game to unlock more characters, to unlock more weapons, so that you can play the game to unlock more characters and more weapons. Right, and it goes on and on and on. Right. And it's, I, you know, and again, I prefer PVE, like cooperative multiplayer, to competitive. So scratches that itch too.
Me too.
Yeah. I'm looking forward to playing more.
It's good. Mm-hmm. So I guess we would be remiss to not talk about briefly some of the problems with Andromeda. It is not a perfect game. We've been kind of singing its praises the whole time, which is what we do on the show. We try not to dwell on the negative, but there are some things, it's taken some hits in the reviews. The reviews, I don't think are necessarily wrong. I think that I think it is a really fun experience. Like I said, I'm horribly addicted. Like, all I want to do right now is go play it. So it has that addictive quality. I think some of the problems that I have with it are just technical problems. And I should kind of preface this by saying that games are really, really hard to make.
Sure.
Like, yeah. Really hard. Like, I don't claim to know how to fix the problems that they have. I'm just going to say some of the ones that I've experienced that have kind of detracted from my experience as a player. I'm still having a lot of fun, but you know, some things have kind of bothered me a little bit. I think the number one at this point is distance between planet to planet. And I know it's a game that's about, you know, it should take a long time to go from planet to planet, but it's load screen after load screen after load screen. So for instance, if I'm doing a loyalty mission and I have to go down to a planet, it'll take me maybe 10-15 minutes of just different loading screens.
It feels very MMO like, you know, in your travel. Yeah,
it does, because you know, there's a loading screen for the ship landing, there's a loading screen for it taking off, there's a loading screen you know, getting into different rooms inside of the Tempest. So like, I don't know if your Xbox One is doing this, if the S is doing this, but the old day one launch Xbox, like if I go between some rooms on the ship, the door will sit there and spin like a loading bar spinning, and the door won't open for like 15 or 20 seconds.
It's not as long, but I can definitely tell you that if you on the Xbox One S, if you arrive on your ship, generally you're standing at the bridge, right? And you turn around and you try to get into the tunnel that leads to kind of like your planning room. If I run straight to it, I will stand there for maybe like 3 or 4 seconds before the door opens. It's not 20 seconds, right?
Yeah, mine's longer than that. But again, my system is very, very old, and you know, it's probably barely clinging to life.
But I mean, but like you're right about the travel times from planet surface to planet surface. Like that could take 2 or 3 minutes to do something.
Right.
Like that,
and some of the missions are so like, you'll be like, okay, we want you to go back to EOS and look for this, you know, piece of remnant tech. So you'll, you know, get all your stuff together, load out your character, you know, get in the ship, go down to EOS, get in the Nomad, fast travel to the spot you need to fast travel to, drive, get out, scan something. They're like, all right, now let's get back in the Tempest and go to Ilos. And you're like, it took me 15 minutes to get down here. I'm old and tired. I don't have all this time to do all this. And that's, I think, you know, one of the problems with large open world games is, and I don't know if there's a way to fix something like that.
It's like, it's pacing problems is what they are, you know, like,
yeah, right.
Narrative pacing, gameplay, to your point, there are some nights, well, you know, I only have a couple hours a night to play, and there will be you know, a night here and there where I like never fire the weapon a single time.
That was me last night. I literally, other than multiplayer with you for a little bit, I got into the game after that. I played for 2 hours, did not shoot my gun. It's like, and I wanted to, but I was like, I couldn't get to a point where, you know, there was something for me
that's,
to
that's
shoot.
That's why I play so much multiplayer, is that sometimes I just really want to like let loose and I don't want to be so cold and calculated trying to like navigate my way through the narrative. Right.
Right. Yeah. Right. You know, and I've had a number of different technical issues. Obviously, you know, the L core in the room are the facial animation issues.
Nice. Nicely done.
Yeah. Thanks. Yeah. I was thinking, what is a Mass Effect elephant? Yeah, it's definitely an Alcor. Mm-hmm. Is the facial animations. And I don't claim to know what's going on with that. I just know that, you know, there have been moments where it has detracted from my experience. Like to me, you know, having played through all three of the original Mass Effect games so many times, I can tell you my favorite thing about them was talking to people.
Yes.
And after every single mission, I would go walk around the Normandy and I would talk to every single crew member because I wanted to see what they had to say. And I wanted to, you know, experience as much as I possibly could out of those narratives. In this, I find myself, I don't ever fast forward through conversations, but there are definitely conversations with NPCs on the surface and stuff where I'm not too into it just because it's, the camera angles are a little weird. And then the lighting's a little bit weird. And also the facial animations are a little bit weird. So like it doesn't feel as immersive. Mm-hmm. I feel like the first three games had a very cinematic quality, even when people spoke with one another, right? Yep. Mm-hmm. Just the way that it was lit and the way that the camera operated inside those games, the different close-ups on the characters and their faces and the facial expressions they were making. You know, even though the first Mass Effect is 10 years old, it still has this very beautiful cinematic quality
to it. It's that heavy, heavy film grain that I think was like the first time I ever saw like an option in the settings menu to be like disable film grain. And then you do, and you're like, oh, that's terrible. Just turn it back on. Like I want it to look like a movie.
Right. Yeah. Right. But I feel like some of that is missing from this. So you'll encounter somebody on the surface and it just won't have that same gravitas as the first games. And I don't know, you know, why that is. I think the voice acting is fine. Like I don't have any problems with it. There are a couple of characters that I'm just kind of like, they're okay. But I think for the most part, the cast is great.
Oh, yeah.
So I think it has to be just the overall quality of some of the facial animations and, you know, of also, you know, the way that the cameras operate inside conversation.
Yeah. And I mean, you know, we don't claim to know how this was done, but it sounds like it was more of a, I don't want to call it a design decision, but maybe a decision that needed to be made about the design more than it was a controversy, which is what, you know, some tried to make it out to be, even before the game launched, unfairly, of course. So, and this is what we predicted as well, is that it would be not, you know, I think I said it was much ado about nothing. It didn't turn out to be that, but it wasn't also like, it wasn't some big conspiracy either. Right. It was just kind of like, this is how it was done. And you're like, okay, we understand, you know?
Yeah, absolutely.
But, I mean, it's obviously something you can't overlook, but again, it's not like,
right. Have you encountered any other big technical issues while playing?
Nothing that I would consider to be like awful in nature, you know, like nothing that I'd be like throw the controller down. Like maybe there was one time, you know, where I completed a battle and I wasn't able to speak to the person I needed to speak to and I had to do that battle again. There was another time where I wound up in a place where my party mates were kind of like walking on like a invisible surface, so it looked like they were floating, you know, like 100 feet off the ground.
Yeah.
In front of me, but you know, again, that's no big deal. Like it was just a place that I was standing in for like 2 minutes and then I teleported, right? And then you know, probably the thing that impacted me personally the most is that, and this was a known issue and I think is something that was even patched today, which is the ability to do matchmaking in multiplayer. So you and I went into a game last night and tried to matchmake with random people and we never saw anybody until maybe after two or three matches. And that was a known issue. And it was something that I believe they sent out a patch for today. The other thing that I was having trouble with was, when you go to do the special Apex missions, not through the app, but in actual multiplayer, you have the ability to either create that match or join an existing one. and I would either find that I would create my own match and no one would join, or I would attempt to join someone else's match and it wouldn't actually be that mission, just a standard bronze mission. So I wouldn't actually be doing the thing I wanted to do. So, as far as like the, and I think these are things they're aware of too, and they're working to fix those. As far as the dialogue goes, the animations and stuff like that, I like to play games like this with subtitles on, cause I have a bad, I'm not great at tracking stories sometimes. So I like to kind of like read the name of the person who's speaking so that I remember the names and, read the dialogue, so I make sure I don't miss anything. So, it just kind of turned out for me, I spent more time reading than I do looking at the faces anyways, which is like, this is bad and good, right? But it's just kind of like something that I need to do when I play to keep track of things.
Right. Right.
And, you know, I experience, like, it's, I can tell that it is not, like, there are bugs, right? But the bugs that I find are all manageable for me. So, in my experience, you know, playing games, my belief is that these things will be patched over time. And while it is unfortunate that it's happening now at the launch, like, I do have faith that they will be fixed in the future. And my, kind of my story for this was how, you know, the launch of Assassin's Creed Unity was kind of met with all this like hubbub over like one image of someone's face exploding, you know, like right, that was circulated around the internet. And then I ended up playing that game, not at launch, but maybe like 2 to 3 months after the game launched, because I had a backlog and I experienced no problems whatsoever. Right. It was like the game ran fine, no loading problems, no multiplayer problems, no exploding faces. So, you know, I feel like in the same vein, like this is a major game from a significant studio, from a large publisher. Like, I don't think that the game is just going to come out and then everybody's going to walk away from it. Right. It's going to continue to be supported. So, and you know, for me, the facial animations are one, you know, not insignificant, but one slice of a very large game. Right. So I'm kind of enjoying the other aspects of the game, even though this part maybe left a little bit to be desired. But it's, for me, it's a much larger experience, and, you know, that includes multiplayer, that includes looking at planets and kind of like enjoying space in general. So
no, I think I agree. I mean, I've encountered, I think, more bugs than you are describing here, but, I don't think any of them are terrible to the point of me like throwing my controller and getting upset about it. Right. I mean, we've all played games with bugs before. I think that the thing that so many people were just shocked about is that like this is a Mass Effect game that's been in development for 5 years, right? And like people really, really wanted it, and
yeah, sure.
And for a lot of people, the Mass Effect trilogy is a really important trilogy and a really important and significant franchise, and for it to come out and be riddled with bugs, and you know, I have a list, I've been writing them down as I encounter them, just because I'm curious about those kind of things, and like how they happen. But
you can, you know, actually,
if
post
I'm
all
having
those too,
as many as I'm having, then other people are having probably just as many, if not more, which means that, you know, they had to be aware of it in some capacity before the game went out the door.
Yeah.
Right.
Yeah. I mean, you can post these to the EA like support website too. Like, you can list them as bugs.
Right. Right. But again, it's not, at this point, it's not detracting from my experience. Mm-hmm. Like, if I encounter one, I'll figure out how to fix it myself. you know, which is, if you play a lot of games, you're like, okay, well, X led to Y, which leads to Z, and all I have to do is go back and, you know, and fix what I did, or load an old save. Right. Mm-hmm. So it's not the end of the world, but,
we should also mention that we're recording this on Monday night, the 3rd. Tomorrow they're supposed to make an announcement regarding the plans for the future of the game, which I would assume would include some content plans. But they, you know, they already kind of acknowledged sort of the early feedback on their Twitter account, and I think we'll hear more of that tomorrow. So I'm interested to see what they have to say.
Yeah,
you know, regarding the state of the game. But I also hope that, you know, I also hope that it's not just, you know, if it's text, I hope it's not an entire blog post about how they're going to fix bugs, because like, I understand that will probably happen, but I'd also like to hear about like what they want the game to become, you know, over the next few months or whatever too. And that can include, you know, multiplayer content expansions, like additional planets to explore, like whatever the case may be, you know, just even dropping additional weapons into the game or tweaking the balance or, you know, of the different systems and stuff like that too. So,
yeah.
I feel like there's a lot of ways to kind of like take this very large game and make it larger. And so, we'll find out more tomorrow.
Yeah. And I guess my closing thoughts are, it's a really, really good game. Like, if you've been apprehensive about playing it because of the, you know, some internet stuff that you've read before, I'd say, you know, take your time with it. You know, dig into all the different systems and have fun with it. And there's a lot there, and there's a lot to do. And the critical path and those, you know, companion loyalty missions are really, really well crafted. So I think, you know, there's a lot of really great, you know, A plus Mass Effect kind of, you know, inside this game.
Yeah. And I mean, like, and again, I'll just throw in one more bid for multiplayer too and say that, you know, don't just get bogged down, not bogged down, but don't feel like you need to kind of like binge the single player experience like all at once, because there are certainly great experiences to be had in multiplayer as well. And there are even some synergies that you can create between the two, especially like the Apex thing kind of bridges the gap between single and multiplayer. And I think the two go hand in hand narratively, and I think they're trying to build a narrative around multiplayer, and you can really have some great experiences even with random people. I mean, you even, you know, texted me after the fact last night, we had a great match, and you're like, that was amazing. And it's like, yeah, that's what multiplayer is supposed to be, is that you kind of like play at the edge of your abilities and you extract with like, you know, a sliver of health left, and all of a sudden you're like, that was fun. Like, that's really, and for me, that's what the experience is of Mass Effect. So
yeah, they definitely hit a home run with that.
Yep. Cool.
Well, cool. I think that's it.
I'm sure we'll have more episode to say, you know, in the coming weeks, but
like, oh, of course. Yeah. When we finish it, we'll probably talk about, maybe we'll do a spoiler full review with a little bit of the plot and narrative and stuff, because there's a lot I want to talk about with that too.
Yeah. And I mean, that's pretty much all we could do, you know, given our current limited availability and when we can play. So I think we've done enough.
I mean, I think with the cumulative like 60 hours of gameplay, I think we're at a good place where we can actually talk about it.
Yeah. Even though we're like at like 30% completion, at least.
Seriously. Yeah. It's a big game. Yeah. Thank you guys so much for listening to episode 267 of the Rated NA podcast. Once again, we are going to be at Star Wars Celebration, doing a live show, and that's going to be Thursday, the 13th of April at 12 PM. We'll record it there. So it'll probably pop up in our feed eventually, but if you're at Celebration, come say hi. We'd love to say hi to you. Otherwise, you can find us on Twitter, and that's @NerdAppropriate. You can email us directly, and that is Matt, Scott, or Ash@NerdAppropriate.com. We, of course, have a Facebook page, which is /NerdAppropriate on Facebook, and Twitch TV, which is Twitch.tv/NerdAppropriate as well. And we will be back with an all-new show next week, and then a Star Wars show after that.
Hooray.
Yay.
All right, get out there and play some Mass Effect.
I'm going to do it.
See you.
Hey everybody, welcome to episode 266. Is that the actual number?
Yeah, it is.
Of the Rated NA podcast, I am your host, Ash.
Oh wait, hold on. Maybe it's not. No, I didn't. I sabotaged you.
It's okay. We'll do it again.
Okay.
2,677.
Oh god.
Be like, oh my god, 80. How old would we be?
Be like 80 years old or something? Let's see.
60 years from now.
Ugh.
We'll be dead, man.
Okay. Whew. Well, that was a close one.
I don't think we're making it to episode 2,677. I'll be like Vader, just in a big suit. It's a podcast. The suit is built for podcasting.
We'll be doing this from within the singularity is how we'll be doing it.
There we go. All right. Let's do this again.